wave of murder which is sweeping the eastern third of the nation is being committed by creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims. First eyewitness accounts of this grisly development came from people who were understandably frightened and almost incoherent. Officials and newsmen at first discounted those eyewitness descriptions as being beyond belief. However, the reports persisted. The medical examinations of some of the victims bore out the fact that they had been partially devoured. I think we have some late word just arriving, and I'll interrupt to bring this to you. This is the latest disclosure in a report from National Civil Defense Headquarters in Washington. It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. A widespread investigation of reports from funeral homes, morgues, and hospitals has concluded that the unburied dead are coming back to life and seeking human victims. It's hard for us here to believe what we're reporting to you, but it does seem to be a fact.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're acting like a child.
Look, they're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
He'll hear you.
Here he comes now. I'm getting out of here.
Johnny!
One of them. It gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill. A dead body must be exterminated, either by destroying the brain or severing the brain from the rest of the body. This situation must be controlled before it's too late. They are multiplying too rapidly. They kill for one reason. They kill for food. They eat their victims. You understand that, Mr. Berman? That's what keeps them going. If we'd listened, if we dealt with this phenomenon properly, without emotion, it wouldn't have come to this.
Quiet down.
There is a martial law state in effect in Philadelphia, as in all other major cities in the country.
The normal question, the first question, is always, are these cannibals? No, they are not cannibals. Cannibalism, in the true sense of the word, implies an interspecies activity. These creatures cannot be considered human. They prey on humans. They do not prey on each other. That's the difference. They attack, and they feed only on warm human flesh. Intelligence, seemingly little or no reasoning power, but basic skills remain are more remembered behaviors from normal life. There are reports of these creatures using tools, but even these actions are the most primitive. The use of external articles as bludgeons and so forth. I might point out to you that even animals will adopt the basic use of tools in this manner. These creatures are nothing but pure motorized instinct. Their only drive is for food, the food that sustains them. We must not be lulled by the concept that these are our family members or our friends. They are not. They will not respond to such emotions. They must be destroyed on sight!
What the fuck is wrong with you people? They're dead! They're fucking dead, and you want to teach them tricks?
They have to be rewarded, Captain. Why else will they do what we want them to do?
I don't want them to do anything but drop over!
Yes, well, apparently they're not inclined to do that for you, Captain.
Is this your progress? Is this the shit that's supposed to knock our socks off?
It's the beginning, yes. It's the bare beginning of social behavior. Civilized behavior. Civil behavior is what distinguishes us from the lower forms. It's what enables us to communicate. To go about things in an orderly fashion without attacking each other like beasts in the wild. Civility must be rewarded, Captain. If it isn't rewarded, there's no use for it. There's just no use for it at all.
Zombies cannot run. I say this definitively. As the grandfather or the godfather of zombies, zombies cannot run. So anyone who has a zombie running, don't listen to that person. Their ankles would snap. I mean, you know, what did they do? Go and join a spa the moment they rose from the dead? Give me a break. They're dead. I guess the original idea for Night of the Living Dead was basically inspired by a novel, a Richard Matheson novel called I Am Legend. Richard actually jokes with me about saying that I stole his idea. And I keep saying, no, my guys aren't vampires. They certainly aren't vampires. They're not even zombies. Zombies, to me, were, you know, those boys in the Caribbean who, you know, do the wet work for Lugosi. And I thought I was creating a completely new monster. You know, the neighbors suddenly turned into flesh eaters, ghouls. And that's what I called them, ghouls in the film. And I thought they were completely new. What I really was saying, which I didn't articulate until the second film, was when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. And that was actually the tagline for the second film when I finally gave up and decided to call them zombies.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, MacNez Podcast, episode 75. Back again, I don't even remember the last time you were on. I know it wasn't that long ago, but Mike Marin's back in the house. What's up, brother?
Not much, man. Just still feeling it from yesterday's news. Why don't you break it down in case nobody knows? Tell them what happened.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone in the horror community knows that we lost one of the greatest directors in horror in filmmaking of our time, and that was George A. Romero. He passed away from cancer, and it was a shock, man. Mike here is actually the one that told me. I was driving back from the Bay Area, and I got your text, and just said George Romero, and I went, no, I had to pull over instantly and just look and read to see what happened. And I was bummed out from there on. And, but, oh man, I can't believe it. I mean, we're all going to go sometime, but I was devastated, man. I was just like, oh, I mean, I think what really made me sad was I met him at Comic-Con one year. And he was hella cool, and he was a really nice guy to talk to. The thing that pissed me off about that meeting is, here's George Romero sitting there in his booth in the main exhibit hall in San Diego Comic-Con, and nobody was around his booth. It made me like one person was there when I got there, and I was like, "Do you guys know who this is?" And everyone was like walking by like, oh, I don't know who he is. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my, get out, man. Just go to HipsterCon. I mean, God, oh my God, that's heartbreaking. But you, fuck it, man. You devoted fan, You and I both know the Dead movies, left to right, back to front, underground and above ground. I mean, you got to meet him. That's the main thing right there. I mean, shit, he, out of all those people, though, like, here comes one dude that's got so much love and respect for the genre, for the man, and you got to meet him. I mean, I got your picture off of Facebook, and I put it, you know, on my movie pages for my films. I had to throw it up there to let everybody know that he had passed away, because, you know, devoted horror fans like us, that, you know, like, we felt it with Wes Craven. You know, we got to meet Don Coscarelli, and you know, you and I eventually, hopefully soon, are going to get to meet, you know, the great John Carpenter. But like with George Romero, man, you got to meet him. You're lucky, man. You are so damn lucky, because like that right there was just to meet someone legendary. That's a legendary director, man. Legendary director of. And opened up the doors for the zombie genre. I mean, there wouldn't be, you know, The Walking Dead or Resident Evil games. You know, there wouldn't be those if it wasn't for the genre he brought forth. I mean, like the flesh eating ghouls is what he brought forward. There were other zombie movies like I Walked with a Zombie and White Zombie, but there wasn't no cannibalism. But George Romero, on top of that, like, added in the social commentary for each of his films, which was groundbreaking. And you know, to have him pass, it's a milestone. I mean, for horror, it's a time of mourning, but it's also a time of honoring now. I mean, can you imagine, like, from here on out, man, his name is like, it's legendary. His name is Kanan now for everything, or Canon, or however you pronounce it. But yeah, dude, it's just like, you know, George, we love you, man. Thank you for everything you gave us, for inspiring us to you know, God, I don't know how many times we played, you know, zombie games with our action figures. I mean, everything was just like, we loved it. We love the genre. We love the man, and we're gonna miss him. I mean, shit, we're gonna miss him.
Yeah, man, it was unreal. I mean, meeting him and talking to him was just, it was unbelievable. I don't know what else to say, but I was glad that I got the opportunity to meet him. I actually did. Jesse and I talked about George Romero, and we also lost Martin Landau. If you guys don't know, we talked about them too, this morning when we did a episode, for Horrorcopia, and we just kind of went through his movies. But what we're going to do on here is we're going to just run through his, the original trilogy. Well, it was before he added three more to it. So his series of Dead movies, and, just talk about other little things in between, like Martin or the Crazies or Creepshow. We have to talk
Creepshow.
About that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, man, if it wasn't for him, there would be no Walking Dead. There would be no Resident Evil and all that. And He started it all. I mean, with the, like, yeah, flesh eating ghouls, or they just called them, I don't think they ever really called them zombies.
The only one that, just a real quick piece of trivia here, the only in the original trilogy, the only character to call him that was Peter, played by Ken Foree, whom you've met also.
Yeah.
But he said that, you know, with those bay doors open, there's going to be 1,000 zombies in here. I mean, but in the first one, they were ghouls and things. You know, those things out there, those things turned over our car. Then the newscaster, the flesh-eating ghouls. And then it went to Dawn of the Dead. They didn't refer to them as anything until Peter said, you know, they referred to them as zombies. Day of the Dead, Colonel Rhodes, played by Joe Pilato, one of the best villains ever in horror history. I mean, he was referring to, you know, those walking piles of garbage, the talking pile of pus. I mean, he had all these different names for him. And was a Steel, played by G. Howard Clars, was a you puss brain bags of shit. I mean, they were just letting them fly in that one.
So. He was awesome in Day of the Dead. Get over here, you shithead. Let's go. I got one hanging for you.
Your old pal Steel wants to see you.
I mean, but yeah, these movies, man, we grew up on them, watching them, and just memorizing the lines and what George Romero did with these movies. And for us, I mean, and everyone else that's a horror fan, I mean, you have to love these movies. I have come across some people where like, oh, those were okay. And I just I did everything to hold back from not punching them in the face. Like, what are you talking about? go watch your Vampire Diaries and whatever wannabe horror stuff that's out there now. But if it wasn't for this guy, man, you wouldn't have The Walking Dead. I mean, that's the bottom line. I don't care what anyone says. I wish that he would have directed one episode. I remember there was rumors about him wanting to do one or directing a Resident Evil, but there was all rumors. I mean, we didn't know. He just kind of dedicated himself to what he was doing with film and producing and everything.
He was actually slated to direct the first Resident Evil movie, but his vision was not, they wanted something sleek and sexy, you know, so that's what we got with that series. But, you know, he wanted it more to focus on, you know, the zombie outbreak. And then I think one of the creative differences he had was he wasn't too keen on having monsters, you know, like the Licker or, you know, the Nemesis or any of that. He just wanted to make it strictly a zombie film, which would have been fine, you know, because those were the main Nemesis in the first video game when they were in the mansion in Arklay Hills. But yeah, he was an innovator, a groundbreaker. I mean, the first film was, I think, we've seen it a number of times. We know that by heart. And I think whenever they showed that movie in the Bay Area at 11 at night on Channel 2, KTVU, holler, with the late, great Bob Wilkins, you know, in Creature Features, I remember that's where I first saw it. And watching it with our older brother, Joe, God rest, Joe was like, I remember him sitting on the floor playing solitaire, and I'm trying to watch this movie, and he's like, are you sure you want to watch this? So we kept flipping it back and forth between like reruns of like Love American Style, and then flip it back when it was getting too scary. But I remember the first time I saw it was on Creature Features, and scared the shit out of me. I mean, it was very, very good independent film. Very good independent film.
Yeah, that was the first place I saw it as well, was Creature Features. I remember when we were living on East 28th in an apartment. It was just me and Jamie and my mom. They're probably bowling because that's where they always are. Our babysitter next door, he was a teenage boy. His name was Mark. I remember that. I think that's why I named my son Mark, because this guy was like hella cool. He was like one of the coolest guys I've ever known. And after that, I think I've always liked that name. But anyway, he was like, hey, man, there's a scary movie coming on TV. You guys want to watch it? And it didn't go, hey, does your mom let you guys watch scary movies? And Jamie was like, all right. And I was like, okay. I didn't want to be the little pussy of the bunch. I had no idea what it was. He just said, oh, it's about these monsters that are eating people. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he put it on. We sat there, and Bob Wilkins came on. He's sitting there in his rocking chair, Creature Features. I also met the late, great Bob Wilkins, too. Marky and I met him. Awesome man. He was also Captain Cosmic on Captain Cosmic Show. They came on in afternoons after school on KTVU. But anyway, the show came on, and I remember sitting there on the floor watching it, and then just right from the get-go, I was a little nervous and scared when that first ghoul comes onto the screen when they're in the graveyard that attacks Barbara and her brother. What the hell's his name?
Johnny.
I wanted to say Jimmy. Johnny. Yeah, when they attack him, I think I remember getting up and sitting on the couch, like right next to Mark. And he like just put his arm around me and I was just sitting there. Jamie sat there on the floor. I can remember still seeing him sitting there with his big head. And we're sitting there watching, I don't know, we had a small little TV, but it was black and white anyway. So we sat there and we watched the whole movie. I think at that time I really didn't understand what the hell was going on, but just these things that were trying to get in the house and get these people, I was just more scared of it. I didn't really understand the movie until I was much older when I had seen it again. But yeah, I still remember that first time I saw it, man. We were sitting there watching it, and then it always came on. It only came on Creature Features. I never saw it. This is all way before cable. For you younger people, no, there was no satellite dishes. There was no HBO Showtime. This was, in the 70s. And, I remember seeing it again cause it came on. I remember they advertised it. They usually, when they show advertisements for Creature Features, it's usually kind of in the prime time late night area. And, this was years later cause we had moved out of that apartment into, we were living on East 19th at the time. Oh no. Yeah. We were living with Molly then. And, I remember it came on and I sat there and watched it again with Jamie and, Renee. She watched it and Renee got too scared and just went to sleep. But me and Jamie sat there and watched it again. And after that, man, once it came to video and all the times it came on TV, then cable came around and it started being on like Rhonda's Up All Night or whatever on USA or just Joe Bob Briggs, his show that he had on TNT. They always showed it around Halloween and it would come on at least a few times. And I'd always sat there and watched it and I had it on VHS. You gave me that one crappy version of it where they added
that's the 35th anniversary one something like that.
Yeah, the one Anchor Bay put out when they added a new scenes to the beginning and tried to add some shitty zombie scenes in the middle. Oh, it was horrible. If you guys have seen that, Night of the Living Dead was a public domain movie because I guess that back then Romero and his crew didn't really understand the whole movie rights thing, so they just put it out. And there's now, like, if Mike and I wanted to remake Night of the Living Dead and call it Night of the Living Dead, we can do it because so many other directors and people out there have remade this movie and put it in their own image. And the ones I've seen were horrible. There was one that was in 3D, which was, I can't even remember. I know I have it on DVD somewhere, but I just remember watching it once and going, what the hell is this? And then there was like Night of the Living Dead, Day of Reckoning, or some kind of crazy undertitle. You can't touch the original, just the original George A. Romero's vision. That movie is just, it's a timeless classic, man. This is something that everyone needs to have in their library.
It's in the Library of Congress. It was such a poignant film in history. I mean, with the social commentary that is, it got inducted into the Library of Congress. So, I mean, for a film like that, because one of the best stories I ever heard about was when I was watching a documentary a while ago, and it was about horror films, and it wasn't Terror in the Isles. It came out after Terror in the Isles, but I remember Rick Baker was being interviewed and he was talking about it. And he said that, one of the stories that, best stories he heard floating around was when, you know, Night of the Living Dead came out in 1968. And prior to that, every black and white film was, you know, universal monsters, you know, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Creature, Mummy, you know, all the great legendary films. And when this movie hit theaters, you know, a black and white horror film, parents assumed that it was going to be like a universal horror film. In which case, when the ball got rolling, a lot of them were bringing their kids out, covering their eyes. And, you know, this movie, for its time, shocked a lot of people because of the violence, the gore that it showed, the scenes of, you know, matricide and patricide, cannibalism. But I think my favorite piece of information that I always like to share about the film was what made it, you know, I'm going to use this word several times here, is what made it really groundbreaking and revolutionary was the fact that it had a black protagonist. The good guy was a black guy. In the 60s, around the 60s, unheard of, you know, because of turbulent times, it was, you know, civil rights and you know, a lot of things going on in the South, all over the country, matter of fact. But to have a black or African American protagonist that was pretty much, you know, if you watch the film, he's pretty badass. He's, you know, protecting these white folks actually away from the you know, horde of zombies that are, you know, laying siege to the house. But just that, the actor, Dwayne Jones, the late Dwayne Jones, was very, if you watch that film, the feeling you get too is almost like you're watching a documentary. The way it was filmed was so greatly edited and put together with the newscasts and the radio spots and the action going on with the characters in the house. It's very, man, very great film. One of probably the best zombie film if I'd ever had to pick one.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is just fucking awesome, man. I love it. And after this one, I mean, roll into the 70s. He gave us another awesome film, which is probably, well, the first movie came out in 68, and he did some movies and TV stuff in between that one. But his next dead movie was Dawn of the Dead, which came out in 78. And that movie just blew me away when I first saw it. And out of all these zombie movies, there's like a million zombie movies right now. And out of every zombie movie that I've seen, old or new, this is my all-time favorite one. And I do love the Zack Snyder's remake too. That one was pretty awesome. Oh, but let me go back real quick. We can't leave out Tom Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Oh man,
and
that great. That was a great remake of a very classic film. That in itself, in my opinion, is a classic remake. And who else better to helm it than, you know, Tom Savini, the special effects master? I mean, he showed the utmost respect for the original, you know, the formula. But by just changing one character didn't even affect the film at all. It was still a great film, you know, by changing the role of Barbara, played by Judith O'Day in the original, to change her to Patricia Tallman, who actually started out in the industry as a stunt woman. To have her take on Barbara and then turn the role into a total badass instead of a catatonic young woman. I mean, that in itself was pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, I mean, that movie was awesome. I remember when I saw that when it first came out, it was like opening weekend, and there was like nobody in there to see it. But I didn't care. I mean, I just like going to the movies. Hey, I got my own private screening. But that movie was awesome. It was amazing. That one came out in 90, yeah, movie's awesome. But Zack Snyder's his remake of Dawn of the Dead, I went in there like, I remember when I first heard about that, like, ugh, why are they remaking this? There's nothing wrong with it. And what Zack Snyder did, it's got zombies in it, and it's got a mall, but he took it and made it his own. But it was still an amazing movie. It was a good zombie flick. And this is all in the running zombie era. Return of the Living Dead was the very first movie where we had zombies running, and it continued this. And I think that's what made this one more really scary, is how they ran. And it's like, if you're not good at running and can move fast, your ass out. But that movie was fucking awesome. I mean, the very first 10 minutes of the movie, got the opening scene before the credits even roll, opening credits roll, was just like, damn, what I just buckle up, because you're about to go for a hell of a ride. And that movie was awesome. But the original one, the 78 version, George Romero's one, that movie was just, I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay, cool, we got another movie, zombies, it's continuation from the first movie. I wasn't sure if it was going to be a direct sequel, like tie into, and maybe we're going to hear something about the people that were in that house. But no, this was many years later, and it's just like, it's been going on this whole time, and they're still trying to figure out what's going on. They're still trying to get a hold of the situation. And just, and it wasn't, because there was just so many of the dead that just creating more dead, and it was just getting out of hand. I think it was at this point, this is when everyone was just, you know what, society was just giving up, and let's hide. So yeah. I mean, that's what we got with these characters. We had two SWAT guys, Peter and
Peter and Roger.
Yeah, Roger. We got those two, the two SWAT guys, and that SWAT scene beginning was amazing when they went to raid that that apartment building. They went into this apartment building just to, they knew there was zombies in there. They knew they had to go in there and kill them all, because all these people were keeping their dead and down in the basement. So that was basically why they were charging into that place to go get them. And all hell broke loose once they got in there. And that whole scene was amazing. And when Wooly went nuts and was just blasting fools, and the awesome effects of Tom Savini in this one, just that exploding head when Wooly just kicks open that door and just blows. If you pause it and everything, it does look cheesy and everything, but when you're watching it, it goes by so quick. But that was another thing I was kind of questioning. Was it a zombie? It kind of looks like a zombie when you pause it, or was it, he didn't care? Was he just busting open doors and just firing?
Yeah, he was just killing people, because it was a free-for-all for him at that point. I mean, first of all, his opening lines is like, he's pissed off that, you know, all those people in the ghetto, I guess they lived better than he did, the way he saw it. And he just said, well, like that guy said, Willie's gone apeshit. It was just a free-for-all for him. And then I think, like, when you pause it, the guy whose head he blows off, the guy's just standing there. It looks like the dude's standing there with his hands in his pockets. He's just chilling. And then, boom, someone kicks your door in and blows your head off. Yeah, that'll ruin anybody's day. But I think that whole, you know, you talked earlier about the world crumbling. I think the movie started off very well with the debate, you know, the two guys debating. And the way that one guy says that, you know, every dead body that is not exterminated becomes one of them. It gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill. I think that right there is really drives a wedge into you, because, you know, at that point, it's like, I didn't understand when they were talking, like, why all those people were getting mad when he was basically saying that we need to exterminate the undead. And I guess there were still people that were morally opposed to it. Like, well, these are still people. And he's like, no, they're not. You know, like the Francis Ford Coppola looking, you know, guy in towards the middle of the film when he's doing the newscast, and he's saying that, like, you know, these aren't your family members. You know, they're not. They're pure motorized instinct. But going back to I love the name of the chapter in the Blu-ray. The chapter is called Ghetto Holocaust. And that's that scene with the SWAT guys trying to, you know, take that tenement. But just that idea, you know, I was watching it last night, and just that idea of that truly represented the last bit of law and order, and it just turned into chaos. I mean, to me, and you know, dear listeners, if you haven't seen this by now, I'm sorry, you should have, but because Nez and I are gonna be throwing out a lot of spoilers. But the one scene that really impacts me in that whole, you know, that whole scene is when, you know, they finally make it down to the basement. And Peter goes in, and there's like a little caged in area, like, I guess, where you do your laundry or what have you. And there's all those zombies sitting in there just eating. And the music, the way the music by Dario Argento's group Goblin, the way that music is just this pulsating beat mixed with these sounds of dead people wailing. It's really a chilling scene. When he goes in there and he just takes his pistol, and there's other SWAT guys watching, and he's just taking them out, like shooting them, like putting them to rest. But just there's that scene in itself is like one of the scariest scenes ever in the Romero zombie saga.
Yeah, I mean, that And it was a real powerful scene because our character Peter Kenfori, he's standing there just like, and he's crying, looking at this is what I got from the scene. He was looking at African Americans like him, like, I'm killing my own people right now. I mean, this is what I got from that scene. I'm not too sure what Romero was trying to say here, but it seemed like he was just sad that he had to kill these people that looked like him. And it was like you said, yeah, Dario Gento's music was just eerie. I mean, the music through this, all of it is eerie, and it's all amazing music. Even the little mall music, that thing. I mean, even that little thing, it sounds cool and everything, but when you hear that, I think of this movie, and I kind of get creeped out. I was actually watching Dawn of the Dead last night. I watched the first two, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, and then it was kind of late when I was watching it, and I just seen this movie a billion times plus one, and I was still creeped out. I mean, the scene kind of moving forward when we get to the mall, the scene when Flyboy Steven, when he's down in the boiler room type of thing, when he's trying to just figure out what's going on, when he was looking for books and keys and everything, and you see that one security zombie walking around in the background, that scene, I don't know what it, I can, that scene and the scene with the Hare Krishna, those two scenes creep me out. I mean, it's I don't know why though. I mean, I'm good with the rest of the movie, but just those two scenes always give me an eerie feeling, like I need to look over my shoulder or look out the window, and I don't know, it's creepy. But I mean, this movie, it had the social commentary behind it. I mean, the first three movies did, but I mean, once we get all that and our four get together and they all take off in the helicopter. And I mean, it gets to the effects of Tom Savini. I mean, another awesome effect. If you guys haven't seen this movie, yeah, we're going to ruin it for you, but I'm sure most of you have. It's on YouTube. The first two movies, Night of the Living Dead's on there, whole movie, good copy. And Dawn of the Dead is on there. It's a decent copy. But the scene with the zombie helicopter, the helicopter that cuts off the zombie top of his head, it looks cheesy now, but for the 70s or little kids, 7 year olds watching this movie, we're like, oh my god. And it was awesome. I mean, it's just how they did that effect was they just like basically had string on the top of his head, and when the propeller, I mean, it wasn't a real one, but it just they pull it away, and then he just, blood comes out of his, they pump blood from cords,
his leg,
yeah, the cord or tubes that were running up his leg, up behind his head. You can totally tell it's a fake head when you first see this zombie on screen and everything. But I mean, it was just, it was an amazing effect for what it was. And then once they get to the mall and them struggling to, okay, we're just gonna stay here because they really didn't have nowhere to go because they were running low on gas, and just them, their whole mission to try to make that mall safe. It's the Monroeville Mall in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. It's actually, I was talking to Jesse. I'm going to go visit him hopefully sometime soon. He says that mall is only like an hour away from his house. And I'm like, what? And I said, well, I'm coming over there. I said, we're going over there. So if you have the DVD or Blu-ray, there's a during one of the special features, Kenfori and Steven, David, what the hell's his last name?
David MG?
Yeah, they, the nurse zombie and the one old bald zombie guy. There's a couple zombies in here that are like, they must have been specialty extras because they show them a lot in this, throughout the film. And a couple other guys, I want to say the helicopter zombie and I think one of the bikers. They actually, the mall closed down and they had a tour of the mall, and they were actually walking through it, and they were, oh, this is where the bank was, or this is where this happened, and all that. I mean, that would have been awesome to be on that tour. But this was years ago when this happened. But that mall, I mean, at the time in the late 70s, I think the only mall that I'd ever been to was Eastmont Mall. But after seeing this movie, That's all I can think of. Even today, 2017, going into a mall, I immediately think of Dawn of the Dead and thinking of, okay, if that was to happen and I'm in this mall, I mean, every mall I go into, I don't know why, it just pops in my head. I try to look for escape routes or what I would do in that mall. I don't know how big this Monroe Mall is, but it seemed pretty big enough for them to be driving cars and motorcycles all over the place in it, and just everything that went on with them, just trying to survive and just clear out all the dead that was inside and everything. And it was an amazing feat. I mean, it was kind of action in the beginning. Then that's what I've noticed about Romero's movies. Right when you get to the middle act of the picture, it just kind of slows down and just gives you either speeches or talk build up for, and then when we get to the end, when the final zombies, when the bikers break into the mall and all the zombies come pouring into the mall, and they just have to, they're fighting the bikers, they're fighting the dead, and everything that came with that was awesome. It was like those awesome shootouts and the effects when the zombies were attacking the bikers and everything. I mean, Tom Savini's effects were just brilliant. And it was like all these movies, this was all or nothing days where everything was practical. No CGI, yep. Blood, no CGI zombie pieces and everything. You look at Resident Evil. I loved all those movies, but it's just a CGI fest. As well as, I know Land of the Dead, and I want to say Diary of the Dead used CGI blood. Not a lot, but you can tell. And I'm not a fan of that, but I mean, this is when they made everything by hand, all the latex, all the them pumping in the blood that squirts out everywhere. And that's what I loved about Romero and Savini when they worked together. They were never afraid to use a billion gallons of blood because it was just awesome. And I just, the effects of them when they were tearing the bikers apart, the dude that, the little Mexican bandito that kept trying to get his blood pressure checked. Back in the days, kids, there was these little machines in malls. I think they're still out there now. Maybe if you look for them.
They're at Walgreens.
Yeah, you stick your arm in this little thing and it takes your blood pressure for like a dollar or something like that. But
don't do it unless there's an adult.
Yeah, and don't do it during a zombie apocalypse because you can get the outcome like this little bandito guy. Man, I don't know why he did it, man. All hell was breaking loose, but he still stuck his arm in there again. And then
my man was trying to stay healthy.
And he chewed his arm off. And that was the best because it still took his blood pressure. And it was a little thing. Please sit still. And I was just like, oh, my God. But just when the zombies started eating everybody and tearing them apart, man, it was just awesome. And
It's like the third act in the first three Romero films. He basically was just like, let Tom Savini just let him off the leash. He's like, go ahead, man. Just because, like, for the exploding head scene in the first act of Dawn of the Dead, like it was filmed. The head was filled with he just tore apart styrofoam coffee cups for the brain, for the skull matter, the brain and torn up pieces of paper. Crumpled up for, you know, brain effect. And then I think for the end, when the one biker gets his stomach ripped open, they actually used intestines, like pig intestines. And then, because I remember reading a story where they had to keep those refrigerated, like every night they had to put them back in the fridge. And it, what I thought was cool was like reminiscent of, you know, when I shot The Smudging was, you know, with the Indian Center, they let me have the building from this hour to that hour. Monroeville Mall, you know, let Romero's crew have the building from sundown to sunup. So, you know, in those 10 to 12 hours of the store being closed, that's when they got to do all their stuff. So, you know, it had a lot. The film had a lot to say, you know, and it showed a lot of memorable scenes, things that'll stick with you. The story was well written. Have you ever read the book, the novelization?
No, I haven't. I tried looking for it, and it's pretty pricey.
Yeah, I have mine at home somewhere. It's still in one of the boxes at the folks' house. But the bikers in that film, the bikers were supposed to be dressed like Vikings, you know, with the sandals and the fur and you know, this. The main guy's name was Thor, and he had this, you know, Viking helmet, and his wench was on the back of his bike, and you know, that's what the novelization. And they had a puppy, not the bikers, but Flyboy got I guess there was a pet store in the mall, and there was a puppy, so there was a puppy there with them, and in the director's cut, I guess Peter had a brother. Because when he and Fran were talking in the helicopter, he said that one of his brothers was in jail and another one was a pro football player. But then I remember he never knew if his family was safe. And so he just kind of went along with them because he was going to survive. But real quick, with the Romero zombie films, one thing that if you have a keen eye like Nez and I do, as far as, you know, characters appearing in other films, the airstrip zombie from Dawn of the Dead, the one that's actually the one on the poster, he was actually in an episode of The Walking Dead, and Bub, from which we'll get into Day of the Dead, there's a zombie named Bub. He actually made an appearance in one of the Walking Dead episodes. It was the episode where Glenn had to go through that tunnel. And Bub was in there. He was in that tunnel.
Yeah, man. Just, real quick, going back to bikers in night gear, Viking type of thing. If you wanted that, all you had to do was wait a couple more years. Romero came out with this movie called Night Riders. I seen it once a long time ago. I don't really remember it too much. But if you look at the poster, there's like a knight on a motorcycle. So I think he still had that idea that he wanted to do and just made another movie for it. But, I mean, Dawn of the Dead, man, it was just from like Mike said, when the mall people gave him their mall, it was basically, okay, we're going to let you guys in once the stores are closed, but you need to be out at like 6 a.m. because they opened up the doors again for all the senior walkers that come in and just like to do their walking first thing in the morning. And I remember hearing a story, or it must have been on one of these commentary things, that when they were the seniors were outside, as they were all leaving, there's all these people dressed up as zombies, all bloody and crazy looking, and all these senior citizens are looking at them like, what the hell's going on? And, but that was you watching this movie, man, especially when the biker scene and when they were driving the car around in there, I'm sure there was tire marks everywhere because they were screeching around the corners and the bikes were sliding when they were falling. So that as soon as these stunts were done, they had to go out there with rags or whatever and just immediately start wiping up the skid marks and everything from the tires. And I was like, damn, that's a lot of work. Not skid marks in your shorts, ladies and gentlemen, but skid marks from the rubber of the tires.
Dude, I don't know if you know this, but here's a bit of Mike trivia. Anytime I hear that combination of words, I lose it. I can't. I don't know why, dude. Just anytime I hear somebody say fucking skid marks, I lose it. So good thing I'm keeping it under control right now. But yeah, man, there's a few scenes. I was watching it and I was thinking, like, when that one big biker dude breaks those TVs, I wonder if they bought those or they just had props laying around or asked, you know, it's just little things you think about. But the end biker zombie battle scene with Flyboy and Peter running back and forth, you know, that's a good that was a good action sequence. I mean, the action was fast paced and it left you rooting for characters, you know, wanting them to live. And anytime I'm at a mall like you, you know, certain things remind me, like if I go down way on the end of a corridor and there's an elevator and I go to take it, I always think about Flyboy being in there by himself. And, you know, while everything's all hell's broken loose. But yeah, good, very good film. And then we have what was 1983 was Day of the Dead.
85.
1980 was 85. Okay, yeah. Damn, I was in eighth grade. Yeah, 1985 gave us George Romero's Day of the Dead, and this one was set in Florida and filmed at an actual gypsum mine, underground mine that is in, I think, near Pensacola, I believe. But anyway, this time the trilogy takes a more scientific approach to the zombies and what makes them. I guess they're trying to domesticate them or trying to make them, you know, rewire them to make them more human and make them not want to eat us. But it was one thing about this one, that the effects were good. I think there were some of Tom Savini's best effects, because I think his use of squibs and the reality of how, you know, like in Dawn of the Dead, okay, in Night of the Living Dead, they used Bosco chocolate syrup for the blood, because it showed up better in black and white. For Dawn of the Dead, it was like this bright red, kind of comic book style blood color. And then in this one, it was more realistic, more kind of that crimson dark red. And the blood, like I said, the blood, the practical blood effects were really good in this one, not to mention the gore, which we'll get into later. But one thing that always bugged me about this film was the music. This composer by the name of George Harrison, he did the music for this, but it was kind of more like upbeat, kind of like it gave us little cues of happiness in the music. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, all right, well, let's just keep our eyes focused on the visuals then. But other than that, it was probably, what would you rate it in the trilogy? As if you were to rate them 1, 2, and 3, what would you rate this one as?
It would be 3. I mean, Dawn of the Dead would be first, Night, and then Day. If you want to add the other 3, I can, but I mean, I'm just mainly just out of the 3 is when we were kids. It was 3. I mean, I loved it for what it was. And, but I think one of the things that the first time I'd seen it, I'm okay with it now, 'cause I've seen it a jillion times, but I remember when I first saw it, I was like, oh yes, another movie. And that the first image of the first zombie that we see is just all mangled up, his jaw's missing, and it says Day of the Dead. And it's like, oh, yeah. But when you see all the other zombies, they look more like monsters than this one. Like the eyes were more like bulging out like a skull type of eye frame, and their teeth were all crazy. And I'm just like, just because you're a zombie doesn't mean your teeth are going to be all nuts. I mean, unless your teeth were all crazy like that before you died. But I don't know. It was just the visual looks of how they looked. I was kind of like, okay. Because
they look like the zombies in Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah. I mean,
like more, I guess they were trying to create like a deteriorating like skull effect to make it look like you're, you know, cheekbones are sunken and your eyes are more sunken. But then some of them it worked, but then there were some that kind of reminded me of you know, like real quick, Planet of the Apes, whenever they had mass extras as apes, they just kind of threw on this quick appliance on their face, and then, you know, they just kind of looked like they were wearing masks. And in this one, it's kind of, when, if you've ever seen the documentary, you see them have the zombie tent, and they're just kind of like quickly sticking these appliances. And some of them even had like full head masks. But then the ones that were more focused on, they took more time to make them look more believable, I guess.
I think the ones that were, they really did up were the more, the eye catching looking zombies, like the clown zombie that was walking around, or the football player kid zombie, or I mean, there was just certain ones that, like, they really focused on. I mean, you can tell who has a mask on and who doesn't, and those are usually the ones in the background. Same thing with Dawn of the Dead. I mean, well, they didn't really go too much on the facial effects of putting on the latex or anything. I think there was only like maybe one or two that had damage to their face, like the zombie that's on the poster, the one that almost gets Peter when they're at the airport hangars, when the bald one with the half of his face chewed off. But most of them, it looks like they just spray painted on like blue, like a kind of a light blue color onto their face and kind of darkened up their eyes. And that was it. I mean, that was scary enough. But then in Day of the Dead, it's like they really went for it. They really put makeup on or masks or what have you. Here's a question. So from what we gather from Night of the Living Dead, it was a satellite that blew up in the atmosphere and came down, and whatever was in it, radiation started everything. That's what it tends to, for us to believe, that of what started it all. Cause they never really say what actually started it. But I was thinking, okay, if radiation did fall down from the sky and get on these people, a lot of the zombies, like in Night or Dawn, it just seemed like, or even in Day of the Dead, I mean, it just seemed like there was nothing wrong with these people other than their faces were blue, and because they looked fine, they had no damages to them, no nothing, and they were just like. I was like, how did all these people die?
Did you ever see one of his last, George Romero's last interviews?
No.
When it was, I forgot who it was with, but he finally said what it was. And everybody was, you know, all the fans are waiting, well, what is it? And he goes, it's supernatural. And I was like, yes, there's no explanation for it. He just said it's supernatural. It just happened. No, you can't explain it. There's no virus. There's no disease. It just happened. And we can't explain why. There's things that, you know, mankind can't explain. And this was one of them. And I was like, that is fucking awesome. Because like, it's kind of like what John Carpenter said about Michael Myers and the new Halloween, the Rob Zombie one, is he's like, why did we have to give him a reason why he was? I just said he was. He was like a force of nature. He was a shape. And you couldn't explain what he was or why he was. And Rob Zombie took it, you know, that he came from an abusive household and he was bullied and that sort of thing, but John Carpenter was always like, he just is, you know, there's no explanation for him. And that, and fans always like that. I, for one, always like that. Like, why does he do what he does? You just never know. Like one day he just kills his sister and goes off the deep end. I mean, but with George Romero, you know, coming back to him, he was just like, it's supernatural. There's nothing that explains it.
I liked what, Peter's grandfather told him when the famous line in that, it's also one of the tags on the poster, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. And I just went along with that. I mean, I thought that was like a powerful line in the movie. I didn't really care for it so much in the remake, how they used it, but when he was telling them the story that his granddaddy was a priest in Trinidad with voodoo, and he told him that I like that thing, like, hey, there was just no more room in hell, so the dead are gonna walk around and everything. That line, and just thinking about it, scared me first time I heard it, and I was like, whoa. I mean, that was deep.
And then even the character of even the character, the black guy in Day of the Dead, like his explanation too, was like, was God gave us a curse because so we can get a glimpse at what hell was like. And then he's like, you know, maybe this is supposed to be because maybe, you know, here you're trying to figure it out, but maybe, you know, God figured we were getting too big for ourselves trying to figure his shit out. This is kind of along the same lines. It's like, you know, like the first one thinks it's radiation, scientific. The second one goes to, you know, religious, spiritual belief. And then the third one kind of mixes it up with, like, you mess around with science too much and it's going to blow up in your face. And I think each one of those movies has its own explanation. And that's cool. I mean, because that's our first instinct is when something happens, we try to figure out why, you know, like, why is Michael Myers the way he is, or what made Charles Manson go off the deep end, or John Wayne Gacy, and or what makes people eat people's faces by after eating bath salts. I mean, like, there's just so much shit that, like, you know, but back to Day of the Dead, I mean, it was with his vision in that was, I think his commentary in that was science, you know, scientific research on something that can't be explained. How far will we go? You know, how much of ourselves, of our humanity, will we sacrifice to find the answer? Like, you know, spoiler alert once again for Day of the Dead, you know, the doctor in there, whom they called Frankenstein, the doctor was using the bodies of dead soldiers, whom the soldiers were assuming were being buried, but I guess he was going and digging them up and using them for his experiments. And when the lead soldier, played by Joe Pilato, Colonel Rhodes, when he finds out, he goes batshit nuts. And then that's when, in that movie, that's when all hell breaks loose in that. And then, you know, there's a zombie battle, and then the scientist guys are trying to get away, and the helicopter pilot is trying to, you know, catch up to them so they can go and get in the helicopter, which is up top because they're underground. But Tom Savini, you know, I can't sing him enough praises for the special effects in this one, because they're really gory. I mean, this is the first zombie movie we've seen where we've seen a human body get ripped in half. I mean, get literally pulled apart from the waist. And that effect in itself was like, whoa, my Jesus. You know, first seeing that, I was like, holy shit, he ain't playing around here. You know, or that one's very good too. It's a good, you know, as far as like the three movies, it's a good kind of follow-up to the first two. Gives you that sense of hopelessness. I mean, you know, what is humanity's last stand? Is to hide out in a abandoned mine where there's food and water aplenty, but, you know, is that where you're finally at? Is you're stuck down in a hole while the undead roam the earth on top? I mean, that's gives you a feeling of hopelessness.
Yeah, I mean, just yeah, you may think you're safe from these, but it seemed like what they've proven throughout these movies, wherever you hide, they're going to get you. In the first one, they're hiding in a house. Second one, they're hiding in a mall. And this one, they're underground. But in these first three movies, they still got to them. No matter what they did, boarding up the windows of or blocking the glass doors to the mall, or building a wall in a hallway to disguise another hole, another door, so it doesn't get up to them in the mall. And in this, there was only... Well, there was actually two ways in and out of this, but they didn't know about the second way in Day of the Dead until the end when they found it. But the elevator of it just going up and down, the place that they use, it's actually in Colorado. They said it's in the side of a mountain or something. It's basically just a storage unit, because in the movie you see there's boats and all kinds of things in there. They didn't put those in there to be props for the movies. It was like, they just, hey man, just leave these here. And we'll work around it. And, it was just the sense of dread of there's nowhere to run from these things. And I mean, even the doctor said it, Logan said it, he goes, man, I mean, cause they talk about, man, all we want to do is kill them all. And Logan, the doctor, told him, they call him Frankenstein in the movie, he's like, the time to do that was in the beginning. He goes, right now, because they outnumber us. So he goes, there's no way. So now, like, yeah, like you're saying, with the scientific part of it, we need to help them kind of
make them behave is what,
yeah, was what he was doing. And the only way to do that is to reward them. I mean, with Bub, I mean, to where Bub just could be right there next to Logan, and he wouldn't get agitated. He wouldn't try to eat him like everyone else. That's what I loved about Romero's zombies compared to what we see now, Resident Evil, Dawn of the Dead, or not Dawn of the Dead, The Walking Dead, or even Z Nation, where they just want to eat you. And they're all just brainless, stupid, dead walking around. The Romero's zombies, they were able to, still had some kind of, brain in them to where they can use stuff to attack or whatever. Because in the very first one, the very first zombie that we see, he picks up a rock or a brick or whatever and tries to bust the window when he's trying to get Barbara. In Dawn of the Dead, they were that one that was walking around carrying a gun. I mean, and just them trying to just figure things out. And Day of the Dead, we got Bub, who basically spoke. This is out of all the zombie movies we've seen, that other than Return of the Living Dead, but that's nothing to do with it. But he like spoke when Logan was trying to teach him. Hey, when he was holding the phone, and he's like, "Hey, just say hello, Aunt Alicia." And then Bub said it was all, but you understood it, and then it was. Yeah. He picked up a gun and cocked it.
He knew how to load a gun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Romero's zombies were good. They weren't just brainless, stupid things. Or even jumping forward to Land of the Dead with Big Daddy. Man,
Big Daddy.
He was like able to control. I mean, there's zombies in there that were still playing their instruments. That one that was blowing the horn and all that. But all his zombies were still not fully stupid walking around things. They had some kind of brain function, and that's what Logan was trying to tell them and do, that these things, they still have a brain, but we just have to teach them not to eat us and all that. I mean, that's what I loved about this one, what it was trying to do, because the other one was just, hey, they were just trying to survive and not get eaten, and they were doing that in this one too, but they were trying to figure out what can we do to live with them, because it was too late. Like I said, the time to kill them all was right in the beginning, but they couldn't do that.
He said that it was like 400,000 to one.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite, effect in this one, is when, Rickles got it. One of Steele's, sidekick, a little, I don't know what he was, if he was Mexican or what, but he was always just giggling around, and he was just basically,
he went nuts.
that little dog that hops around, the big dog. Hey, buddy, and all that. I don't think he was scared anymore. He just lost it and was just laughing. And when all these zombies, hoarded all over him, he just fell on the ground, and he was still laughing as they were tearing the top of his head off and peeled his eyeball or his eyelid back. And I thought that was an amazing effect, because one of them like stuck their hand under his eyelid and just basically just peeled the top, scalped him, and just peeled the top of his head off. And he was still laying there screaming as they're tearing him apart. Or even when we get to Rhodes, when he finally gets it, actually Bub, Rhodes kills, Logan, and which was Bub's friend, the nice friendly zombie. And you could see the emotion in Bub. When he sees Logan there, dead with full of bullet holes, he actually like got sad, and it seemed like he was about to cry because he got mad. He like screamed and he was banging his chain against the wall, and then he walked off. And then when he comes upon Rose is when he finds that gun that's laying on the ground, and it's actually loaded, and he's pointing and shooting. And hits Rhodes a few times, and he falls down and opens up a door. And this is when all horde of zombies come in and just chew him up. I mean, even just the line that he gave, that I hear on a horror podcast when they talk about these movies, Rhodes is getting just torn apart by all these zombies, and he's just choke on it, as they basically just pulled him apart. Pulled off his legs. The zombies are dragging it down the hall, and his guts are spilling out, and he's still talking shit, because he was talking shit through this whole movie, and he went out like a champ. He was still talking shit.
which was improv. That wasn't in the script. He did that. But the funny part about that scene was the intestines were actually they're actually cow intestines. And what happened the night before was the power went out, and so the refrigerator stopped running. So when they shot that scene, or actually, no, it was over the weekend when they came back to film that, said a lot of those people playing zombies were walking away throwing up because the smell was they had rotted, but they didn't have time to bring in new intestines. They just shot it as fast as possible. But what's his name? The guy that plays Rhodes, Joe Pilato, was like, dude, it was so just nasty. I mean, I think all of us got sick after we shot that scene because the smell just filled up the whole hallway. But quick, going back to Dr. Logan, I think one of the things that he, when he was talking about, you know, the zombies scientifically, and they were talking about, you know, he mentioned that, I don't know, they get no nourishment from us. Like, it's just instinct that they want to eat, but they don't, you know. He had one tied up. He had one shackled down that didn't have a stomach. He had dissected it, and it was still laying there with its stomach, like its chest and everything, wide open. And then he said he removed the stomach, but yet it was still trying to bite him. And he was like, it's just instinct. That's all it is. And that's what they said in Dawn of the Dead, was that they're just pure motorized instinct. You know, some of them, you know, and going back a little bit, like you were talking about them using tools, Tom Savini, who played the one semi-zombie when they were hot wiring, you know, he used his zombie used a crowbar. You know, the zombie he played, he used a crowbar to break the window. And then in Dawn of the Dead also, it's like that they would still use tools as bludgeons, but that was just kind of like a primitive act. It wasn't like they were thinking about. But when, you know, they're wondering, the survivors were wondering why they keep coming to the mall. And Flyboy said, because this was an important place to them. You know, they still come here. This is an important place in their lives. You know, and then even he's the one actually in Dawn of the Dead that remembered, even when he was a zombie, he remembered where that hidden doorway was. And remember, he led them. He led them all to that makeshift wall, and then they tore it down. It's because he knew that was still there. You know, you're right. You know, that Romero zombies are, you know, they still had some kind of sense of what, you know, what things were and what it meant to them. And so, yeah, man, it was a good trilogy.
What I liked about that scene was when he came out of the elevator, because Steven got killed in the elevator by some zombies. He got all bit up, and then he just died. And there was these zombies that knew he was in there. And see, I mean, that's how smart they were. They knew he was, there was something in there that they wanted. And when the doors open and he's standing there all zombified, they like were reaching for him, but then they just stopped and said, oh, fuck, too late. And then they all turn around. And then when he starts walking to where that hidden door is, when he gets to the hallway where it is, he's like pointing and making,
yeah,
like, this way, guys. And
his mouth was like opening and closing.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, that's what the magic of Romero's zombies. And I mean, and it's like that. It was like that in all of his movies. I mean, we'll just kind of touch on the next three, which was that came out in 2000, was Land of the Dead. That, I think that was the one that had the biggest budget because Universal backed it up. And then a few years after that, we got Diary of the Dead, which came out, I want to say 2005. Land of the Dead was 2005. 2007, we got Diary of the Dead when Romero jumped on the found footage thing. And then 2009, we got Survival of the Dead. Land of the Dead was cool for what it was. We had big actors. We had Dennis Hopper and John Leguizamo and the beautiful Asia Argento. And we even had cameos from Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright as zombies in that movie. And it was what it was. I mean, it was still just people trying to survive in zombies. There wasn't really too much, that much of a, there was a slight social commentary behind that, not like so much as in these first three. that one, there was a little more of just the rich are going to be the ones that are going to run the world, and everyone else that's poor is going to be out in the cold and all that. That's what I got from Land of the Dead. Diary of the Dead was supposedly the beginning of when it all started. But it's like in the modern day time with the internet and cell phones and video cameras and all that. And from what I was understanding, I was listening to another show, and they were saying that while the Diary of the Dead was going on, Night of the Living Dead was going on in the house. But I don't know. I want to say he just, you know what, I think I just need to start over with this. I think that's what he did. So I think those other movies didn't happen, because this is supposedly from the beginning. That's what I got. Who knows? I could be wrong. I mean, I'm sure some of you listeners might know. But that one was what it was. I like it now, 'cause I've seen it so many times. The first time I saw it, I didn't really care for it, but Survival of the Dead, that was the one I was, it's okay. I have it all. I have it just to have all Romero's dead movies, but I think that's one that if I had to put them all in order, that one would be dead last. But out of these last three, I like Diary of the Dead more. I would put Diary, Land, and then Survival. What'd you think about the last three?
I never saw Survival of the Dead. I saw bits and pieces of it, but I like Diary of the Dead for what it was. I mean, I think it jumped on the found footage type thing. But I think one thing that always bothered me about that film was when the girl at the beginning goes, I pieced together all this and I added music for effect. It's like, why'd you add music? I mean, just have the film for what it was. And then to call it, you know, the death of death, it was like, just do a found footage film. I mean, my favorite character in that was the Amish guy, the deaf Amish guy. That when they went to that farm and he was there just throwing dynamite at zombies. but yeah, if you notice, there's a couple, like those last three movies, he reused a lot of his actors.
Yeah.
There was a few guys that were in all three of them as different characters. But you know, like you said, Land of the Dead, Land of the Dead got me hyped when I saw they were doing it, when George Romero was like, you know, the opening, the trailer was like, you know, the creator of the genre comes back to the world he created. And I was hyped up when the first trailer came out and they were playing sound bites and showing scenes from the first three before that trailer got pulled, because I guess producer Richard P. Rubenstein of the Laurel Production Company, who holds the rights over those, didn't allow those scenes to be released. So he just released the next trailer with just the voiceovers, dialogue from the films, but not the visuals. But if you go on YouTube and you look at the original Land of the Dead trailer, you'll see that trailer. And it's a really good trailer. I mean, it's one of the best. I think all the best, the trailers that are my favorite of the Romero zombie movies are, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Land of the Dead. Those had really good teasers and trailers. See, Night of the Living Dead, the guy's voice, you know, welcome to a night of total terror. I mean, the way he was talking. And then the late, great actor Adolf Caesar, who was, I believe he won an Oscar for the movie A Soldier Story. He did the narration of the Dawn of the Dead trailer. And if you go on YouTube, look at those trailers and just the beauty of old school trailers. I mean, it was really, really creepy, actually. But the original, the last three, as soon as I saw like zombies riding horses, that jumped the shark for me. I was like, okay, I don't know about that. And then you know, Diary of the Dead just gave us zombies. You know, that's all they were, was just zombies. Land of the Dead was the thinking ones, the ones that you know, Big Daddy organized his undead army, and they attacked, you know, that town in which, of course, again, in Act 3, Tom Savini and the effects company, they just went all out. And, like, one of my favorite zombie attack scenes was when that one zombie, I don't know if it's in the theatrical cut, but in the director's cut, this one zombie grabs this guy's face and grabs his upper lip and pulls his skin, like, over his skull. when I saw that, I was like, Jesus Christ Almighty, this is awesome. And in Land of the Dead, during the zombie battle scene, the huge battle scene at the end, we get Tom Savini's character, the machete biker from Dawn of the Dead. He comes. I remember seeing in the theater, and all of us hardcore, we all cheered, because he still had his leather jacket, his bell bottoms, and his machete, and he came through chopping fools up. And oh my God, it was just so cool to see the return of a biker machete zombie. But it had the cast, it had the budget, it had, you know, Dennis Hopper, Simon Baker, John Leguizamo, Robert Joy, who was my favorite character in the film. He plays Simon Baker is the main good guy, the protagonist, and his sidekick is a guy named Charlie. And Charlie carries this old World War I rifle, and his face is half burnt. And he's kind of simple-minded, but he's badass. I mean, he protects Simon Baker's character, whose name is Riley. And he's just kick-ass through that. He does, if any of you guys are familiar with the old school war movie Sergeant York, how Gary Cooper would, you know, lick his finger and touch the aim sight on his rifle to catch the gleam. Charlie does that in this film, and it's like, damn, you know, that just to bring kind of that old school flavor back. But and he carries a six shooter, a little single shot six shooter. So it gives you colorful characters. Dennis Hopper is Dennis Hopper. I mean, he's just, you know, just this corporate, you know, corporate guy that runs actually the rich part of town, and the walled in town. He runs the rich area, and, you know, and like you said, you know, and George A. Romero's daughter even has a cameo in that as one of the soldiers. But this one had some very good zombie effects in it too. So yeah, it Land of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and like I didn't see Survival.
Survival, it is what it is. I mean, I was kind of like, okay. It was more kind of like a Hatfield and McCoy battle for the island, and it was just, yeah. I mean, but I mean, this one, I think Diary and Survival had an actor named Alan Van Sprang. I think that's how you say it. He was in Diary of the Dead when those soldiers take over the RV and like basically take everything from them. And then that character, he's in Survival of the Dead. And he's got a bigger role in that one. So I think those two were like pretty much a direct sequel. And that actor, again, he appears really quick as Brubaker in Land of the Dead. And from what I understand, Diary of the Dead was first. If you put those last three movies in order, Diary of the Dead was first, Survival of the Dead, then Land of the Dead. I was reading something, mainly because of this actor, and he plays the same character. But then they never really said his name, because in Diary of the Dead, he was Colonel. But then in Survival, he's Sarge. But I'm like, well, what did he do to get demoted down to a Sarge? Because he was the same character. I mean, because they even referenced, yeah, they show the scene from Diary of the Dead with him. So I don't know, maybe someone forgot and just, hey, man, let's change his rank. But I don't know. But and then that character, again, he's in Land of the Dead, where he actually gets killed. And so I don't know. They said those three were the only ones that pretty much match up in the original three were just standalone movies in this whole whack mad world of survival with the zombie apocalypse and everything. But The first three are amazing, true classics. Land of the Dead, it is what it is. Diary of the Dead, same thing. Survival, if you feel like watching it and you want to be a completist like me, check it out. There was, I'm not quite sure if they're going to do Road of the Dead, because that was something that Romero was working on. He's not directing that. He wasn't directing that one. He was a producer. And it was, I can't remember who the guy was that was directing it, but I don't know. I don't know if that director still does it. From what I understand, zombies are driving cars in that one. So don't ask me how, but
it's supposed to be like Gladiator, but or like a Demolition Derby type thing, and where the zombies are, they put them in cars and they're in an arena or something like that. But I thought George Romero's son was directing a film. He was doing a zombie film in the same universe as the original trilogy. But I don't know what ever happened with that.
Oh, I don't know. That's the first I heard of it. So, but
yeah, I saw an article on like i.horror or something like that. But real quick, George Romero did a separate film. I actually did quite a few other films, but the one that, you know, Nez and I really hold close to the heart is he collaborated with the great Stephen King, and they came up with a movie, a compilation of stories written by Stephen King called Creepshow. And George Romero directed it, and man, it if you love the old EC horror comics, Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, you know, those kind of things of, you know, the dead coming back to life and seeking revenge, that sort of thing, this is the movie for you, because it's five separate stories, all the movies all directed by George Romero, but all stories written by Stephen King. And One of the best movies that Nez and I ever saw at the Parkway Theater. And I am very fortunate to have got a first print comic book when it first came out. I remember saving up all my allowance and going to Walden Books for you youngins. That's before Barnes & Nobles and Borders. We had Walden Books and B. Dalton. I remember there was a Walden Books by the bowling alley that our parents bowled at on the Friday Night League. And we would all go to the mall and just hang out there and be kids. But I remember when I saw that, man, I saved up all my money and got that book. And, oh, my God, I still have it. And now it's back out on the shelves as a reprint. I encourage you to pick it up, because it's not only stories written by Stephen King, but it's also the art by the late Bernie Wrightson is remarkable. I mean, I can't tell you enough how beautiful the artwork is in this book. But you know, get the book, see the movie, and just the stories in there are really good. I mean, we have Father's Day, Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, Something to Tide You Over, The Crate, and They're Creeping Up on You. I mean, those five stories in himself, all-star cast too. Let's see, was it Frank Drebin's in it, Leslie Nielsen, Ted Danson from Cheers, Stephen King himself, Ed Harris, Adrian Barbeau, Hal Holbrook, Fritz Weaver, and the great E.G. Marshall in the last story. But Nez and I had the honor of meeting a great actor, not only in horror, but a lot of different films. What's his name? We met him in Stockton.
Oh,
Tom
Atkins.
Tom Atkins. Thank you. God, I was going to say Tom Skerritt. Tom Atkins. We met him, talked with him for a good 20 minutes. Really a great guy. You know, if any of you are Tom Atkins fans, his movie, his great Night of the Creeps is his Citizen Kane. We met him and talked with him anyway in Creepshow. There's a wraparound story about a little boy who, his dad takes his Creepshow comic away because he doesn't want him reading it, because it, you know, it basically doesn't want his son to be all effed up. But you know, he plays the dad in that. And I think we told him, Nez and I told him that, you know, as far as dad, cinematic dads go, you were the best because that's what, as like our dads, you know, you were no nonsense, no bullshit. You know, I'm going to take your comics away and smack you up a bit. That was our pops were. So, but back to, you know, it's a great movie. It's filmed very simply. Once again, no CGI, practical effects, good story, good acting. Some little comedic jabs in there. Some of the music is actually borrowed from Night of the Living Dead. And there's other few Tales from the Dark Side. I don't know if any of you remember the old series that used to come on late at night on Fridays called Tales from the Dark Side. It's like Twilight Zone type thing. But Richard P. Rubenstein, who was a producer for Laurel Productions, produced that. I do believe George Romero had some production and, you know, a production involvement with that series. But, you know, Creepshow, when was your first time seeing it at the Parkway?
Yeah, it was when we saw it.
Okay. That's right. It's you, me, and Epps. And I don't know if Jamie was there.
He was with us.
Okay, yeah. I just remember seeing that. And then the one story that always stuck out was one story. Epps, if you're listening, man, we love you. the one story that really, I think, was our favorite was probably The Crate. Just because there was a, you know, like Nez and I have said before in past shows, we're monster movie enthusiasts. I mean, we love monster movies, and anytime there's a good monster in it, it's like, just, you know, just bring it here. We'll take it. And The Crate was a great story. Adrian Barbeau and Hal Holbrook and this monster in this crate that was just eating people was just really, really a good story.
He found it in Amazon, didn't he?
Antarctica.
Oh, Antarctica. That's where it was.
Yeah, it was speaking, like way back in the 30s.
Speaking of The Crate, for you Walking Dead fans, because Walking Dead always throws in little Easter eggs, and their nod to Creepshow was they actually had The Crate in one of their episodes. It was when they were having that fight in Terminus. They show it really fast. It's one of the scenes right after Rick and everyone escaped those guys that were bashing in those dudes' heads and slitting their throats, which was an amazing scene. I thought it was awesome. They show The Crate really fast. Someone paused it, took a picture of it, and threw it online, and it said everything. Expedition Antarctica Expedition, da-da-da-da. The actual university of the university in Creepshow and
Horlicks.
Yeah, I saw it really quick, and I thought to myself, that looks like The Crate, but just didn't think anything else of it until someone pointed it out, and I was like, whoa, that was sweet. But yeah, The Crate. And back to the comic book, I remember there was a bookstore. Remember that bookstore at the corner of East 19th and Park Boulevard?
Yeah.
We always would go in and look at books. That's where I saw Creepshow, the book. I was like, oh, cool, sweet. I sat there and looked at it and read it. The only image of that book that stuck with me was actually this one of the cells in The Crate was when the monster takes out Billy. Adrian Barbeau, when it just, there's an image of that where he just basically, that gorilla creature or whatever the hell it was, bites her face, and the blood that's there, who the artist, I can't remember what you just said, but the artist that drew it,
Bernie Wrightson. Yeah,
it was awesome. I can still see that image. And I was just like, oh, my God. And then when I found out that it was going to be a movie, I was like, I cannot wait to see this. That scene is in the movie, but it doesn't look as awesome as it does on in the comic book version. I mean, but the movie is amazing. George A. Romero, Stephen King, you can't get better than that. But every story was awesome. I did like Creepshow, too, but that was just more Stephen King and another director. But this movie is another timeless classic, another George Romero classic, and it's an amazing movie. If you haven't seen it, it's out on Blu-ray, DVD, or whatever. It comes on TV every now and then. If you go out there and Search the High Seas. I'm sure it's online somewhere for you guys to watch it. But all the movies we talked about, the original Dead trilogy, Night, Day, and or Night, Dawn, and Day, and Land, Diary, and Survival. Last three, watch them if you want. They're Survival, I'm iffy on that. I mean, I am going to watch it. I'm going to make it through all of them. If you're following me on Instagram and all that, I've been throwing image shots of the opening scene with Night of the Living Dead, Dawn, and Day, and I just did Land, and I'm going to do the next two when I get to those. But these movies, his movies, he's done other movies in between and TV stuff and all that. Another one to check out is Martin. Me and Jesse were talking about that. I saw it once. I really don't remember. I mean, we were asking the question, was he just nuts and thought he was a vampire, or was he an actual vampire?
No, he was just crazy.
Okay, that's what
he just had a bloodlust. Yeah, he wasn't. He didn't have no powers or fangs, or he was just very disturbed young man.
Did you see The Crazies?
I never saw the original. I saw the remake.
The remake was cool. The original one, it was what it was. I mean, it was. I like the remake better, but I mean. Yeah, whatever. Monkey Shines. Did you see that one?
Yeah, actually, for those fans out there, it has Jason Bay in it, and if you're a Chicago PD fan, the Jason Bay that's in there now is the same. But I guess after he had a car accident, his voice got messed up, so he doesn't sound like he did in that movie anymore. I had the honor of meeting him when I actually was on an episode of Chicago PD, and we sat there and talked for a minute. He's a really nice guy. But that was one of the films that we talked about. And one of the hardest parts for him, he was telling me, was learning how to actually, you know, maneuver himself in a wheelchair. But that I never actually saw that movie from beginning to end. I've only seen it in pieces, and actually this month, I believe it's on Epics, one of the cable channels out here, but I never really got a chance to actually watch it. I know it's like a monkey or something, and it does his bidding for him or some damn thing. So I just remember the poster with that monkey with the symbols. But
yeah, it's a cool movie. Another movie that's out there. If you guys find it, check it out. I seen it once when it came out, and I dug it for what it was. I liked it, but. He's got a ton of other things that he has produced, and just some other early things that he had done. But the main focus that we did tonight was his Dead movies. And
he directed The Dark Half.
Yeah, with Timothy Hutton.
Yeah, good that? Movie. That's a good one too.
Yeah, he was. That was another big budgeted movie, mainly because of Timothy Hutton, but. It's a good movie. It's out there. That movie always comes on AMC. I think, other than Night of the Living Dead, I think that's probably his and Creepshow that pops on every now and then. But I think Dark Half comes on a little more than his Dead movies. But he left us with a lot of good movies, and it was heartbreaking to lose one of the greats. And he will be missed, but his movies, and he will live on in his movies, and he will also live on in Mike and I's hearts for just being one of our idols. And we just can't thank you enough, George, and wherever you're at, man, just enjoy it, because we love you, man. Thank you for everything you've done for film, everything you've done for horror, and just everything you've done for us fans, the fans of yours. And about to cry.
And we promise you we'll stay scared, because that's what he always signed stuff and said that.
Yep.
Stay scared. So we promise we'll stay scared. And yeah, one of the projects I want to do in the future, a couple movies down the line, is I eventually want to take a stab at doing a zombie flick, but we'll get more into that later. And I'm gonna, of course, he'll always be there with me, as one of the great directors and introducing me into the horror genre. So You know, as a filmmaker, I got nothing but respect and love for the guy. So, damn, rest in peace, George, man. You're one of the great ones.
Yep. And we love you, George. And heart goes out to your family. If you guys are listening, your fans are here for you, for George's family and everything. So, take time to watch one of his movies. You don't have to watch all his movies like I'm trying to do, but sit down and watch one of them. Like I said, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead are both streaming on YouTube. And you can find his other ones. Or if you have any of his movies, just sit down and watch one of them tonight or whenever you get a chance. But that's going to be it for this episode. I think we've gone long enough. And I will be back with something else another time. But, hey, Mike, just want to thank you for coming on and helping talk about a guy that we love and what he's done for us as kids watching his movies.
No, for sure, man. Anytime.
Cool. Right on. Yeah, everyone. I'm gonna try to bust out another show before I head down to San Diego. So get ready for that. And E-Society got another one of that before I leave too. But hey, everyone, thank you for listening. Do like the Facebook page, Macnez Podcast. Spread the word on my show. You can. I always put up my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look up Macnez Pod on those. If you to look me up on iTunes and Podbean, it's Skaternez Podcast Network. The Macnez Podcast is on there as well as the E Society. If you guys are listeners of the Horror Returns or Padded Room or Horrorcopia, I always put links to the shows on their board every time I got a new episode coming on. And listen to all those shows as well as Short Bus Cinema with Ricky Morgan. And I can't remember the other guy. Sorry, bud. Also, Ricky's other show, Hailing Power Hour. And Myron, his show, Agent Slumber Podcast. I mean, listen to all those. I mean, there's a ton of horror podcasts out there. And I'm sure a lot of these guys are going to be talking about Romero as well. Podcasts Under the Stairs, them too. But everyone else, hey, man, thanks you all for listening. I will be back pretty real quick with more episodes. And just listen to my San Diego Comic Con daily wrap-ups that I'm going to do every day. They're not going to be long, maybe 10, 15 minutes if that. Hopefully I get a couple interviews. But I do have some interviews lined up. If I don't put them on those little short episodes, I'm going to tack them on to one full episode when I get back, my whole wrap-up of the whole week and everything. So, hey, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Again, Mike, thanks for coming on. And everyone else, man, you guys all take care. And like George Romero said, man, stay scared. And like I always say, man, just rock hard and skate fast.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.